Welcome to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, I'm talking with Nicole and Guillaume about biomarkers, so stay tuned. Biomarkers are really, really incredibly important topics. They can help you in all kinds of different ways, and how exactly, we will dive into this in the episode. We also speak about the biomarker seek, and this biomarker seek will be also very, very present at the PSI conference that is coming up. So, if you have not yet registered for the PSI conference, head over to psiweb.org and sign up there now, because it's really around the corner, and maybe now you can convince your supervisors to attend it. It will be outstanding. I'll be there as well in Gothenburg, and you know, just looking outside, it probably will be an amazing event also from the weather perspective. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, who's organizing the conference. So come over, register there, and I'm sure it will be absolutely amazing. So now let's get into the discussion with Nicole and Guillaume. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. Today I'm speaking with Guillaume and Nicole about biomarkers. Nice to have you on the podcast.
Thank you, Alexander, for having us.
Yeah, very, very happy to be here. Thank you, Alexander.
So maybe as a start, you can introduce yourself first. Nicole, do you want to start?
Yes, sure. So, and before I start, I just want to state that the views that I'm stating today are my own, and I'm not speaking on behalf of my employer, which is Boehringer Ingelheim.
Yeah.
Okay, so hello, everybody. My name is Nicole, and I'm a senior principal statistical advisor at Boehringer Ingelheim, and I'm located in Germany. So at Boehringer, I'm a member of the therapeutic area and methodology group, and my role is mainly to support all the clinical development teams in all topics around biomarker analysis, translational strategy, and early clinical development. So these are all topics very close to my heart and topics I've worked on also in the past. So I've always loved high-dimensional data coming from the life sciences, identifying best models and ways to analyze this data. Maybe just very briefly regarding my scientific background. So I studied mathematics in Cologne, and then I did my PhD in machine learning quite a while ago and at the TU Berlin. And I've also spent several postdoc years in Munich and also as a guest professor at the LMU in biostatistics. So a few years ago, I moved from academia to industry, working for a consultancy called Staburo for several years. And now I'm with Boehringer Ingelheim since last July.
Awesome. Very, very good. Guillaume, how about you?
Same as Nicole, before we get started, what I'm going to be expressing today is going my personal views, my personal opinions, and I'm not speaking on behalf of AstraZeneca. So this being said, my name is Guillaume, and I work as a statistical science director for AstraZeneca in Sweden. And I graduated from NSAI, which is the French National School of Statistics, about 10 years ago. And I did my end of study internship at the University of California, San Francisco. And over there, I was working in a lab aiming at finding genetic variants that could be linked to autism. And I think I got hooked. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved the fact that we were in uncharted territories. I loved the fact that when we were speaking with data providers, they were actually telling us, well, what you are trying to do is simply not possible. Because that's not how we designed the chip. So I got hooked, and since then I've been working with biomarkers. When I relocated to Europe a couple of years back, I made the transition to the private sector, and I worked for a French pharma, working with biomarkers in oncology. After that, I spent a bit of time in a biotech, which was working on the metagenome and using the microbiome to develop new drugs. And now I'm back in pharma, and I work for AstraZeneca, and I work with study design. But still, biomarkers is very close to my heart.
Do you work in a specific therapeutic area, or do you work across therapeutic areas?
So at the moment, I work in respiratory.
Okay.
At AstraZeneca.
Okay, very good. So, speaking about biomarkers, what actually is that?
Well, actually, I think that's a very good question. But if we think about it, there's somehow an unofficial definition from the NIH. And this official definition dates back to the late 90s. And I wrote it down, and I'm going to read it out loud because I think it's very interesting. So this definition states that a biomarker is a characteristic that is objectively measured and evaluated as an indicator of normal biological processes, pathogenic processes, or pharmacologic responses to a therapeutic intervention. So once you've got this definition in mind, you can fit many things under the term biomarker. It can be genomics, can be transcriptomics, can be proteomics, can be metagenomics. It can be many things. It can even be digital biomarkers, which are biomarkers measured by a digital device. That's the NIH definition. But actually, what I think really matters with biomarkers is the role that they can be playing.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, we talk about three main roles. We either say that a biomarker is prognostic, that it is predictive, or that it is pharmacodynamic. And
prognostic would mean that it gives you kind of a value in terms of whether the disease will, you know, improve or deteriorate, or whether the side effect will occur or not. Predictive means that this actually gives you an indicator of, you know, which treatment will respond better or not. And what about the last one, the pharmacodynamic?
So you're totally right regarding prognostic and predictive. And regarding pharmacodynamic biomarkers, these are biomarkers that actually allow to witness the pharmacodynamics of a treatment without always a link with treatment response. And that's the difference between predictive and pharmacodynamic biomarkers.
Okay. Okay.
Now,
So pharmacodynamic may mean you have, it tells you kind of, you get to different plasma levels, but different plasma levels don't necessarily directly imply a different treatment response.
Exactly. And it's a good sign of showing some kind of target engagement.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a given biomarker, if you know your drug is going down a given pathway, then you might be interested in having a look at this biomarker. And this biomarker could be a good pharmacodynamic indicator, because if it varies, then it's a good indicator that you're hitting your target. You engage your target. Then we've got these three roles, and obviously the holy grail is predictive biomarkers.
Yes.
Because it allows you to find your right population of patients. But they are very hard to find. And that's why they're holy grail.
Yeah. I've spent lots of time on this topic. So biomarkers obviously is a really, really interesting topic. And it's great that you kind of explain these three roles for that. What else about that?
Yeah, so I completely agree with everything Guillaume said. So there's this official definition, which is kind of covers everything. It also covers, of course, I don't know, HbA1c in diabetes. Of course, it's a biomarker. It's a physiological measurement. But on the other hand, it's a very established endpoint. The analysis is crystal clear. So there's probably not much to discuss about. So what, to me, biomarkers always have this additional notion of complexity, maybe of multidimensionality, and also maybe not an established way to analyze them. And just what Guillaume mentioned, this in terms of pharmacodynamic effects, that you don't yet have an established link to a clinical endpoint. And also on top of just analyzing the data. One important field is also how to qualify or validate these biomarkers, how to say, okay, these are necessary to show a clinical response. So if you, for example, have established this, you could use them for early decision-making, because if you don't see anything in a biomarker, then it's also clear you will never see a clinical response. So these are kind of the interesting topics, so that not everything is already laid out and established, and how to help change this. And one point I also want to stress, I think there's sometimes a misconception that because biomarkers are often termed exploratory because they're not yet established primary endpoints for regulatory purposes. People misunderstand this in the terms that kind of the analysis aimless, that we just measure them and then let's just have a look and see if a signal pops up. And I think that like this is not true. So we always have these purposes that Guillaume mentioned. You want to have a prognostic marker, a predictive marker, so that you can hopefully select patients who respond best to treatment, or this pharmacodynamic effect or early endpoints. And to me, it's very important and close to my heart that we get away from this notion it's just exploratory, we will never learn. We can have a look and maybe visualize the data, but we will never learn anything from this. So I think it's very important to have also some statistical rigor and the correct models to analyze these types of data. So this is really at the core of what we also wanting to achieve with the biomarker analysis.
You mentioned this notion of validating a biomarker. What does that mean actually?
I think it's a very wide field. It starts kind of at the technical analytical validation to make sure that you can reproduce it. If you measure it three times, that you get similar results. Maybe also, I don't know, if you base something on a tumor biopsy, that if you freeze it and thaw it again, that you can still measure these kind of measurements. So that's kind of more on the technical analytical side, which is very important, but also from a statistical or regulatory point of view, we have this maybe the first step having maybe a correlation to a clinical endpoint when it comes to pharmacodynamic effect. And then I think then also the holy grail or the top would be to have it established as a surrogate biomarker. And for this, of course, you have to do much more. You have to show that there's a causal relationship, that treatment effects in the biomarker translate to treatment effects in the clinical endpoints. And then also when it comes to predictive biomarkers, that you can really select the right patient population, there's also a lot of things to do. You have to show that patients have a treatment benefit, that it also has some clinical utility if you use it in the clinic, that actually people also benefit from it, and many, many different topics. Everything very exciting and the open, active research fields.
Okay. Very good. So you kicked off the biomarker SIG again, the special interest group, which is kind of joint forces of FSPI and PSI. And that SIG has been kind of dormant for quite some time. Why do you revitalize it now?
Nicole and I think that we all face the same challenges when we use biomarker data. And if you think about it, we all face the challenge of handling data below the lower limit of quantification and its impact on the statistical analysis. So that's one thing. One favorite topic of mine is how to find an optimal biomarker threshold. And we all face this. It's not just me, Guillaume, or you, Nico, or you, Alexander. We all face the same issue. And this topic has been discussed for years and years, but there's still no consensus. So that was our starting point for Nicole and I, where we all face the same issues. So maybe we can get together. Maybe we can gather a diverse group of people coming from academia, coming from the pharmaceutical industry, from biotech, from CRO. We can get together. We can discuss these challenges. And maybe we can also kind of break the virtual boundaries that we set between organizations. And maybe we can push the biomarker topic a bit further. So those are starting points. The idea of getting together, sharing lessons learned, sharing challenges, and seeing where we can go.
In terms of organizational boundaries, what are kind of the main issues you see there?
I mean, obviously, there's one which is data sharing. So that's one. But to clear this off the table, as part of this SIG, there won't be any kind of data sharing. There won't be any kind of private data sharing. So we'll be having a look at the various methods, playing with target data sets, and seeing what we can do and what the different methods are doing on target data sets. So this is lifted off. So what about you, Nicole? What is your opinion?
Yes. So I would rather have kind of a different spin or the positive spin on this. So I think we all know that the statisticians work in the pharmaceutical industry that PSI and FSPI, that we have lots of tools to break these boundaries. So I have to say when I transitioned from academia to industry, I was really amazed how openly topics are discussed within the industries across companies. At the beginning, I couldn't believe it. At the university, people wouldn't probably, of course, they would share their results, but they wouldn't openly discuss scientific topics, but maybe also operational topics, or I don't know, just sharing experience, how things are handled in their company. So I find this, that actually makes me proud to work as a statistician in the pharmaceutical industry. And I always keep telling colleagues from my other departments how we interact and how open this is. And I think it's a great opportunity to have this PSI special interest group to discuss these topics across companies and to find common problems, common solutions, and to share them also with the outside world. So I'm really very optimistic about the interaction that we're going to have in the special interest group.
Yeah, that is a cool thing. You know, we are incentivized by helping patients. We are not incentivized by producing publications. And so I think that creates a very, very different environment. Yeah. So which I really love and enjoy working in. Yeah. And I think especially interest group is an awesome platform for this type of exchange. I've participated in different SIGs over the last 10 years, and it was always really, really great fun to see how everybody contributes and everybody also shares, you know, their insights, but also their challenges. Yeah. And when you see, they all have the same challenge, I don't feel as alone as kind of when you sit at your desk and you think like, why is that so hard? And then you think, oh, it's the same for everybody. So speaking about the goals of your SIG, you have talked a little bit on this already. Do you have any kind of specific field you would like to tackle first?
So maybe let's start kind of with the general goals that we have. So on the one hand, we want to explore all the hot topics at the moment that comes about biomarkers. These can be really everything. I don't know, the multi-omics that Guillaume mentioned, the biomarker thresholds, maybe the digital biomarkers that we haven't talked about yet, and where we're also looking for more colleagues to join. Really very wide range of topics that we can tackle. So that's one thing really on topic level to discuss but also to increase the interaction with the other disciplines. So we always have a strong interaction with medicine, with the translational biomarker colleagues, biology, academic research, also to make, to establish this in a broader range. And I think from all the topics that we already mentioned, it's clear that biomarkers have really interaction with many statistical topics. I don't know, high dimensional data analysis, modeling data over time, estimates, visualization. I can probably go on for weeks and weeks. And we all really also want to connect with other special interest groups to have kind of the interaction with subgroup identification and predictive biomarkers with visualization and how we can use this for biomarkers. So these are kind of the three overarching goals, I would say. So Guillaume, do you want to add anything to that?
I think that's very good. Yeah.
So if people want to join, who would be a good person to join the SIG? and actually, help you move forward these goals.
If people Google PSI biomarkers SIG, the first link that is going to pop up is the webpage of the PSI biomarker SIG. And over there, there's all the contact info. Otherwise, people can reach out to us, either Nicole or I, on LinkedIn. And what we also wanted to say is that in terms of ways of working, we are going to be meeting about once a month, and all are welcome. And I think this is very important to us. We think that the diversity, we talked about the biomarkers definition, that it's a broad topic, that is a broad definition, and then we've got the broad statistical analysis and the broad topics. So that's why we think it's important to have a diverse group of set of members, because the more diverse the set of members, the more ideas would flow. And as Nicole said, our weak link at the moment, our blind spot, if we can say so, is digital biomarkers. And we think it's a very hot topic, and it's going to be more and more hot topic in the coming years. So if you hear this, if you work with digital biomarkers, please feel free to reach out to us. Yeah, we would love to have you on board.
So speaking about digital biomarkers, these would be things that come from, for example,
coming from wearables
and stuff like this. Yeah,
like biomarkers we did not have in mind in the past few years. So usually when we talked about biomarkers, the first thing that comes to mind is genomics. So you've got the blood sample, for example, and then you measure DNA, and that's intuitively what biomarkers were. But then when you talk about digital biomarkers, you can be very creative. So it can be wearables, but it could also be the modulation of the voice and picking up signal in the voice. And then, it's a new kind of biomarkers. And honestly, it comes with new statistical analysis. And you are branching towards, so Nicole was referring to the collaboration with other fields. But if you tap into this kind of data, maybe you're branching towards new SIGs as well and exploring, again, very uncharted territories. So that's going to be pretty cool in the next few years.
Yeah, I've heard about a colleague who was working in that, and she looked into different variables to assess different things, and had an intern, and she was testing, I think, four different variables. So she had four different clocks, watches on her wrist to kind of check how they work and what are the challenges. Kind of, for example, let's say didn't work when the Wi-Fi was gone, or these kind of things. Yeah, and so you can have quite a lot of fun with these kind of things to find out how they go.
Yeah, maybe Nicole. Also to add to the digital biomarker field, I think they're also very becoming more popular in central nervous systems. So I'm also working mainly in oncology, but also in CNS. And I think they have a huge potential also to define new endpoints. And there are two things I want to stress. So I think it's not only about kind of the analysis point of view that you think, oh, you have such high dimensional data, how can I reduce it? I think it really needs a good collaboration between statisticians and the subject matter experts. I think we will not just solve this problem by, running kind of a standard high dimensional statistical model on this. So I think it's very interesting, but it also has implications also on how we run trials. So if we can measure the endpoints based on some speech analysis and people don't have to come to the clinic to do long evaluations, I think that can really make a difference also. And it also, of course, has lots of implications. You need to get the data in-house. You need to have an idea how to analyze them in time. So I'm really looking forward also to talk a bit more about these kind of other implications, not just the statistics behind the biomarkers, but also everything from data generation, relationship to estimates. What do you do if people, if the Wi-Fi, like that's an interesting intercurrent event. So Wi-Fi breaks down. So I'm not sure if how we can handle this. And there's also special interest group on CNS and these types of topics and estimates. So I think we're going to have lots of interesting collaborations with the other six.
Earlier, you were talking about the validation of biomarkers. So when we were, I'm going to sound like an old person, right? Back in the days when we were shipping sample, and then when we had an SA provider doing the actual measurement, it had to be validated. And then we had this kind of measurement, and that was it. Now, if we tap it to digital biomarkers, and Alexander, you were referring to watches, then what does it mean? If we think of a digital biomarker that could be a step count, then does it mean that we need to develop, and by we, I'm referring to the pharmaceutical industry, does it mean that we need to develop a device, or can we tap into existing devices? And if we tap into existing devices, what does it mean to have a validated device? You know, these kind of things that are going to be very fun because it's very new. And we're not shipping samples anymore. You know, every single person, every single patient is going to wear the device.
That is really, really interesting. The other point, when you were talking about speech and variables, one other thing is pictures. Yeah, I've worked for a couple of years in dermatology. Yeah, and of course, kind of changes on the skin. Potentially, you know, you can make a picture instead of, you know, going to the physician. Yeah, which are anyway already pretty overloaded with work. Yeah, so and then can you kind of, you know, assess the lesion or whatever you're working on based on the picture. And I think there's a lot of improvement in terms of what can be done in that way, especially also because of telemedicine and these kind of things. Yeah. I've worked with physicians in both Canada and Australia. Yeah. And sometimes distances are really a big hot topic. Yeah. Not everybody works, you know, lives in a crowded space like, you know, in the middle of Germany or in you know, in such spaces where, you know, you look around and you always see the next house. But, you know, the next house might be, you know, lots of kilometers away, leave alone the next dermatologist. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. It helps also clinical trials or clinical development to be more inclusive because you can have measures maybe locally, like one topic, maybe going back from the digital biomarkers, maybe to, I think in general, specifically if we want to measure biomarkers over time in oncology, we want to, I think people want to get away from biopsy-based biomarkers to something that you can measure more easily. And what you just mentioned, maybe imaging is something that you could do at your local hospital. And another very interesting open research field is blood-based biomarkers. We think of ctDNA. Yes, you can measure mutational patterns on blood, and if this is kind of validated and it works, then you can just go to your local hospital or to your doctor, get the measurement done, and then you can have really monitor your disease over time without the need to get constant biopsies. So that's that generates also lots of interesting data, kind of this high dimensional data with all these mutations coming, showing up or increasing in frequency. And so it's an interesting statistical topic, but it also has lots of implications and hopefully making patients' life much easier and leading to new treatments and decisions.
Yeah, I think also not just within clinical trials, also beyond. Yeah, if you think about observational data, lots of these digital biomarkers, as you said, are not that, you know, intrusive. And so it's a much lower hurdle to include it in observational research. Yeah. And then this observational research can be much more inclusive in terms of patients around the world. So that's another opportunity. Very, very good. If someone now listens to this and says, I'd really be like to be part of this adventure because that sounds really, really cool. What kind of qualification would you look for? Is it, you know, just being curious? Is that enough to join the SIC?
That's interesting because people have asked these to us. And what matters is obviously having a statistics or data science background, because what we are going to be tackling are statistical methods to handle biomarkers data. So people having a stats or data science background, that's the first thing. And obviously having an interest in biomarkers. If you worked with biomarkers data, that's even better. And at the moment, the members of DSIG are people who have worked models closely with biomarkers data. But if you just have a general interest in biomarkers, and that's also the thing, you know, if you think, oh, I've got an interest, but I don't feel I'm qualified enough in biomarkers, we can also include you in the newsletter. So feel free to reach out to us, whether you want to include the SIG or just want to hear about, you know, what we're going to be working on.
Yeah. And I think what you're going to be working on will be actually quite sexy in a way, because when I hear you talk about, you know, there's this high dimensional data and, you know, there's longitudinal data and, you know, data from all kind of different sources, you know, as you call it, multiomics, which is a great, great term. That means you need to, you know, you just can't get away with, let's say, a t-test or linear regression. You probably need to be much more kind of sophisticated. So can you talk a little bit in that direction, what you would foresee kind of topics to be?
Yes, Alexander, so I think most people would think, oh, we need machine learning and artificial intelligence because of all this high dimensional data. And in a certain sense, I agree. So we need kind of models that can handle this high dimensionality. But I think there's also more to it. Like when we talk about these pharmacodynamic effects, I'm thinking about maybe joint models to correlate biomarker changes to response. So I think there's not only machine learning out there. I think when it comes to surrogacy, we need sophisticated models, existing models to apply them. I think there's also a lot of insights in terms of latent class models that are also used in other areas. Sometimes I think in my point of view, biomarkers to me often I see them as a kind of a manifestation of something latent, like we want to measure pathway modulation, whatever this is. So, and in a sense, I feel it's kind of similar to when we have patient-reported outcomes, when we also have all these questions that want to measure some latent concept. Mm-hmm. And I would also think that there's an overlap to these not really established methods come seemingly from something completely different field in clinical development. So I'm really looking forward to this. And maybe Guillaume, do you want to talk a bit about more how we're going to identify the interesting topics that we want to talk about the next month?
So as Nicole said, we've identified a couple of, you know, hot topics or topics that are close to our heart, but we think that there's certain needs to come from the group. We cannot just be saying, oh, this is a cool topic to us, let's explore it. So it has to come from the group. So this is currently being done. We are collaboratively identifying these hot topics, or at least the topics that are of interest to us as a SIG. And very shortly, we'll pick a couple of these topics of interest, and we will spend a bit of time working on these, maybe doing a bit of literature review, and then getting back together within the SIG. And in terms of midterm goal, the idea is to organize a webinar by end of this year and to talk about a couple of these hot topics and share with the broader audience what we found and what is the current state of the art.
Cool. Yeah. And Nicola, when you were talking about PROs, that was on my mind earlier already, because this term of validation, you have exactly the same topic with questionnaires. Is it stable? Across different physicians, is it stable across kind of time points? How sensitive is it to treatment, these type of things? And so I'm pretty sure there's a lot of, you know, similar statistical concepts in terms of validation. Awesome. Thanks so much. That was a wonderful discussion about a really exciting topic. And when I hear it, I think I'd really love to join this.
You're welcome. So we meet every month. So just drop us an email, either to me or to Guillaume, and another opportunity to meet at least Guillaume and myself is also the PSI in Gothenburg in June. So we'll have a poster to advertise the biomarker SIG a bit more. And so come see our poster and talk to us. And everybody, please, if you want to join or if you first want to learn a bit more, just look at the PSI homepage. We make an effort to also summarize our meetings so that everybody knows what's going on, even if he or she cannot join at the moment.
Yeah, and we'll put all the links to what we have just discussed, including the links to Guillaume's and Nicole's LinkedIn pages into the show notes, so you can find everything there. Just head over to theeffectivestatistician.com. Thanks so much. That was a really great discussion, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you all in Gothenburg later this year. For Guillaume, it's basically at home play, given that he works.
And I'm probably gonna bike there to tell how far it's gonna be. So yeah.
Speaking about that, what is the, you know, what's so special about Gothenburg that we need to come to Gothenburg?
Oh man, many things. I would say it's pretty incredible to be in the second biggest city of Sweden, but still being so close to nature.
Okay.
I mean, it is just insane. I used to live in Paris, and you know, the nature is not as close. Obviously, Paris is a capital city, but like Gothenburg, yeah, it is insane. Like, you're in a big city, so you've got all the facilities of a big city, but at the same time, if you're an outdoorsy person, you'll have a lot of fun. You can go kayaking, you can go rock climbing, you can go hiking, all within a very, very short walking distance. So yeah, pretty cool city.
Yeah. And of course, there's the sea, which will also be really, 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 really nice. Thanks so much for this great discussion, and see you all in Gothenburg.
Thank you. Have a good one. Take care.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and Casey, who helped with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.